Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I've been seeing this all over TikTok, and I think it's a great conversation starter question, so I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
What is something that is wrong in movies all the time, that movies always get wrong, that bothers you, but that isn't a big deal to anybody else?
Lack of rugs.
You had that answer just on the tip of your tongue.
Yes. In certain movies, there's a shocking lack of rugs. Like, just put some rugs down.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
What about you?
For me, it is when people are allegedly moving between two locations in cities that I'm familiar with, and they're driving the wrong direction to get there.
Hate that.
This is the most egregious example that comes to mind first. In When Harry Met Sally, they are disembarking from the University of Chicago, which is on the south side of Chicago.
Yes.
And they're supposedly driving to New York. But as they're leaving Chicago, you see them driving north on Lakeshore Drive, which
yep.
means they're driving toward Milwaukee, which is not how you get to New York from Chicago.
Correct.
And it drives me crazy. And I think there's a similar faux pas in my best friend's wedding where they're supposedly driving to Comiskey Park, a.k.a. now it's the U.S. Cellular Field. But they're like driving the wrong way on Lakeshore Drive. And it drives me nuts.
I feel that.
We've got a great show for you today. We get into talking about what's going on in Florida with the abortion ban and the possibility of abortion being enshrined into the Constitution after an election this fall. We think it's got good odds, but we're not celebrating because the ban sucks. We're also going to talk about the NCAA women's basketball tournament, how exciting it's been, how many records it's breaking, and how some sports columnists don't know when to just shut up and let them play. We also talked to Representative Barbara Lee, one of our heroes. I think it's fair to say one of your heroes, one of my heroes, someone who is right all the time. And we talked to Dr. Heather Irabunda to help us understand a kind of disturbing story about standard medical practice that I don't think a lot of people were aware of. And of course, we've also got Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, a packed show. A lot of fun. Glad you're here. This is Hysteria, the podcast that only specifies the gender of the athletes when it's men who are playing the sports.
Yes, ma'am.
Women's sports are just sports.
They're just sports.
We are going to talk about the absolute fireworks that have been the NCAA March Madness women's bracket, But first, we have some news out of Florida. We have been tracking this. And just this week, the Florida Supreme Court made two simultaneous rulings impacting abortion. One is bad news. So starting on May 1st, the Sunshine State will ban abortion after 6 weeks gestation. It is one of the toughest bans in the country, and it's going to go into effect. That is before many people even know they're pregnant. This is a huge blow to abortion access in the South because Florida was one of the last places where people could access abortion care. According to the Washington Post, quote, last year, more than 84,000 people got abortions in Florida, more than in almost any other state, again, because all the surrounding states don't allow abortion, and far more than were previously reported in any of the 17 states that have now banned all or most abortions. I'm sure this wasn't on purpose, Alyssa, but a six-week ban starting on May 1st, because of the way that pregnancy is calculated, right? It's from the first day of your last missed period. It is stupid. And I need...
Honestly, who can ever really answer when the last day of their...
Well, I mean...
First day of their last period was.
I can, because there's about a week of, like, just rage leading up to it, and I need to note when it is. But it's measured from the first day of your last period, and a lot of people don't realize that pregnancy is counted retroactively. So after you get those positive lines, it doesn't mean you've had a fetus in you for, like, 2 weeks. Your pregnancy doesn't really count how long you've had a embryo. It doesn't count from the date of conception. It counts from the first day of your last period. So retroactively, when you are 1 or 2 weeks pregnant, you are not actually pregnant. It is very dumb and very confusing. And I honestly think the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology should change that, because it sounds like a six-week ban is that you have a bunch of time to just, like, figure out whether or not you want to keep it. But no, you don't. It actually falls about 2 weeks after your period was due, which means A 6-week ban starting on May 1st means that if you are a woman in Florida and you had your period starting on March 20th or earlier, best practice, avoid sperm because you're probably
at all costs.
You're probably ovulating right now. Do not look at a man with a beard.
No.
Avoid sperm. And if you haven't successfully or you don't want to avoid sperm, go ahead and go on Amazon, buy one of those 50 packs of like Pregmate strips. This is not sponsored by Pregmate, but you can buy them for super cheap. You don't have to go to the drugstore and buy the like $20 two-pack of Clear Blueies. You can just buy these little strips. And starting about a week before your period is due, the first thing you do in the morning is you go pee in a little cup and you test. Because if you don't want to have a baby and you live in Florida, you've got like no time.
No room for error.
No room for error. So don't let semen anywhere near you if you can help it for the next week or so. And start testing yourself on April 20th because that ban goes into effect on May 1st. Second Supreme Court ruling, not as bleak. I don't get to say sperm as much when I'm talking about
No. This is more of an Alyssa win.
This is more of an Alyssa win. It's a strategic win, but strategy doesn't prevent people who are going to fall through the cracks with that really catastrophic loss and that 6-week ban. So the second state Supreme Court ruling will allow an amendment to hit ballots this fall that would codify abortion rights in the state constitution. So that is huge. Basically, voters are going to have a chance to go over the state legislature and be like, guys, guess what? It is
enough.
You don't have the right to make any laws around abortion access because we have written it into the state constitution that medical decisions around abortion care are between a patient and a doctor, which is what they should be. Alyssa, this has some implications possibly for the fall that people have been excitedly chattering about. In your view, what hath the Florida Supreme Court wrought this week?
Okay. Busy bees down in Florida. So a couple things, Erin. First, just related to the abortion ban. First and foremost, this is fucking terrible. Florida, the 84,000 people who have received abortion care last year, where are they going to go? Erin, where are the people in Florida going?
Well, I've got some answers to that, but I will let you continue on your first response first.
Florida was almost abortion tourism destination for people in the South where they could still go and get them. Abortion providers in Florida right now are amongst the baddest bitches that we know. They have been preparing for this. They are doing everything they can to develop relationships further north to make the scheduling within their clinics as nimble as possible to get people who find out near the 6-week mark what they can do. One of the things about this bill that's not being talked about quite enough is that it also includes some shades of SB 8 in Texas. Mm-hmm. They talk about House Speaker Paul Renner, Florida House Speaker Paul Renner, who is a candidate for that fucking guy. He's like, listen, we're good. We get it, ladies. We have exceptions for rape and incest, and like, we've got it. It's bullshit. It's absolute fucking bullshit. You need to, if within 6 weeks of being raped, you have to provide documentation that you were raped. You have to provide evidence. You need to bring either a restraining order, a police report you have filed, medical reports. It's Erin, we know what happens to women who have been raped. That's not really how the fallout comes, you know, that's not exactly the fallout of rape. Yeah, being a tidy, focus-minded person who's like, let me go file all my paperwork.
Yeah, you need a rape permission slip. What do you need to find? A rape notary who can make sure to verify the fact that you were sexually assaulted in order to qualify you for an abortion. And like you mentioned, in Texas, the exceptions aren't really exceptions at all. The laws are written in a way that makes it, they're written in a way that is stupid and loosey-goosey, and a dogged attorney who is determined to prosecute doctors and make an example of them and instill fear in the medical community could easily find a way to wiggle around whatever procedure a doctor found to enable their patient to receive care. Right. And not very many doctors would take that risk.
No. Especially, Aaron, because there is another part of this stupid law, is that it also has, again, shades of SB 8, where if you are found to have helped someone get an abortion, you can be accused of a felony. If you drove someone to get their abortion, you can be arrested.
Mm-hmm. I do want to note, though, that if you live in a state with a shield law, like
yes.
Connecticut or California, you can Google and see if your state's one of them. Mm-hmm. And you were to hypothetically help your friend who lived in Florida,
right.
hypothetically obtain pills in order to end their abortion, you can't be prosecuted under Florida law. If you
right.
live in a place that does that, that shields you from prosecution, and to be frank, I haven't seen many examples of people in other states actually being prosecuted for helping people. These laws seem like
right.
they're on the books to scare people.
Which is effective.
But if you are feeling like keeping it real, you can go ahead and try to play chicken with the Florida law and, you know, be a hero. Because you would,
right.
it would be an interesting news cycle if somebody from another state helped somebody in Florida get an abortion and was prosecuted in Florida. So anyway, just, you know.
Upside about what could possibly happen in November, if Florida voters go to the polls and vote on making abortion a constitutional amendment, Aaron, chances feel positive.
Yeah.
Right now, the polling on this is 60%, 60 to 70% positive. Floridians are known to vote a bit more progressive when it comes to ballot measures than they are perhaps to candidates who are running. So while this feels potentially optimistic for this measure, it doesn't necessarily mean that Democrats and President Biden will be reelected ipso facto.
Mm-hmm. And let's get to that in a second. But first,
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the momentum behind this amendment, Amendment 4, and the fact that there has always been a good amount of momentum behind this, even before
right.
we knew for sure that it was going to be on the ballot. We're going to play a clip from our interview from earlier this year with Anna Eskamani, who is a Democratic elected official in the state of Florida, who has kind of been on the front and center of mm-hmm. watching this whole thing unfold. So let's listen to that clip.
Back in May of 2023, Floridians Protecting Freedom formed. This is a nonpartisan coalition of organizations, large and small, that came together to start raising the resources to bring this initiative forward. And in fact, in the period of just 6 to 7 months, we actually succeeded in collecting more than 910,000 verified signatures to get abortion on the ballot here in Florida in November of 2024, this year. And I also think it's important to note that more than 150,000 people that signed on are registered Republicans.
Yeah, 150,000 Republicans
yeah.
signed on, indicating that they were interested in voting for a constitutional amendment guaranteeing abortion access in the Florida Constitution. Florida voters love Democratic policies, but they don't like the Democratic Party.
Okay. I guess we'll kind of take it.
Yeah, we'll kind of take it. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the speculation on down ballot races, because we don't really know anything. I mean, this is
right.
astrology at this point. This is tea leaf reading. This is less reliable than astrology, because at least astrology has like a couple thousand years of like history and tradition
right.
behind it. And this is just sort of a bunch of pundits being like, what can I say to get on television?
Yeah.
But I think that there have been some interesting points brought up, some interesting questions brought up. One, Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, who looks like Voldemort's penis, and I will not elaborate further, former governor of the state, former head of the the National Republican Senate Committee, who just completely whiffed the red wave in a humiliating fashion. he's up for reelection. At his last election, he only won by like 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So even if these ballot measures don't tend to like really impact races down ballot that much, they don't really need that much impact
a
to
little,
change the outcome.
Exactly.
They don't need that much impact to change the outcome. Also, you know, state level Democrats are feeling a little bit more hopeful that this could bring out voters who are interested in first of all, this amendment. There's a recreational marijuana amendment that's going to be on the ballot. State level Democrats are interested in the fact that this is an opportunity for more of them to get elected and for them to actually make their voices heard in the Florida State House. So that's pretty interesting.
Definitely.
And also, Ron DeSantis, how the tables have turned, sir.
Oh, boy.
He
can't get anyone to say he's smart right now. Even Donald Trump's out there at rallies being like, oh, Ron DeSanctimonious. Don't know what he's doing down in Florida.
I mean, it's funny because I think he won his last reelection bid by like 19 points or something like that, right? Then he gets out in the national media. The national media isn't sitting there, you know, bathing his taint like Florida local media is in exchange for access. And so the emperor has not only no clothes, but a weird body. And he goes back to Florida and everyone is like, oh, this loser. Like he went national and became a loser. And now back in Florida, people are kind of looking at him like a little bit of a loser.
Well, a little bit of a has-been.
I mean, feel
a little bit like a has-been.
In the meantime, we will have more on what people in Florida can do. I'm going to just say that really quick to talk about how women in Florida are going to have access to abortion, how women in the South are going to have abortion access. I think that anti-abortion people know that until there is a national ban, they are not really going to be able to cut down on the number of people having abortions. We saw in Texas that people were still having abortions after the most draconian ban in the country. The birth rate in Texas did not go up commensurate to how many abortions normally occur. So we know that these women are either leaving the state to have abortions in the medical system elsewhere, obtaining abortion pills outside of the medical system. Until the cost of having a child you don't want, going through pregnancy and childbirth, until the cost of having a child you don't want is less than the cost of obtaining an abortion, people are going to obtain. That's like basic economics. Yep. Like, it doesn't really matter to a person who is pregnant and doesn't want to be pregnant. They will pull out all the stops. They will spend all the money because you know what is worse than having to travel to Virginia or North Carolina.
Right.
Or, you know, scramble and not have enough, have to borrow money from people. You know what's worse than that? Having a fucking kid. Having a kid you don't want. Going through pregnancy and childbirth. And I know that the comeback is always like, well, you can give the child up for adoption.
Fuck off.
Honestly, fuck off.
Logan Roy Boyce, fuck off.
I mean, tell me you've never had a baby without telling me you've never had a baby. Like, I know somebody who's given up their child for adoption, and she wanted to. She was not coerced. It was a clear-headed decision. It was incredibly traumatic for her.
I'm sure.
It's traumatic for parents. It's traumatic for children. It is a crisis situation. Pro-life people are hoping to create, like, thousands upon thousands of crisis situations for women to force and coerce them into giving up their babies for adoption. And it is fucking insidious. It's human trafficking is what it is.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. But I will say we're going to be talking about this more in future shows because there are ways, even if you live in a state that does not have legal abortion access or clinics that you can go to, you can obtain pills through the mail, Plan C. You can, you know, talk to people from other states. We are going to talk to other guests in future episodes that can give us a little bit more guidance on this. But, like, if you live in Florida and you find out you're pregnant and it's past the six-week mark, all is not lost. There is care out there and there are people that will help you. So
it is our goal, I think, with this show, is to help make the connections that people need because the government and the federal government, the local government, everyone is making it so hard and so fucking confusing to understand what your rights are. We at least want to help provide some solutions.
Yeah. So we're going to see probably more teen births in Florida. Yeah. We're probably going to see more people giving birth to babies that have very serious health concerns. And we're probably going to see more births that are the result of abuse or I think there's a human trafficking exception actually in the law. And it's like, oh yeah, those people will definitely have their paperwork.
The fuck?
Victims of human trafficking very famously have access to necessary paperwork. That is, Anyway, all right, we have another story that we want to cover in news. But when Alyssa and I first encountered it, we were like, oh my gosh.
Oh.
This is a crazy story. Mm-hmm. We should talk to a medical professional. That's how crazy the story. It is prescription grade wild.
Nuts. Yeah.
And so we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Heather Irrabunda, one of our very favorites, is going to help us break down this really disturbing story from the perspective of somebody who works in the medical community. And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know when it's time to drop Dr. Google and talk to a real medical professional. So we wanted to bring in a doctor to talk about this next topic for reasons that will become clear very quickly. On Monday, the Department of Health and Human Services announced that patients receiving any, quote, sensitive exam, including pelvic and prostate exams, particularly if those patients are going under anesthesia, must give explicit written consent before the exams are performed. So this comes 4 years after a disturbing New York Times investigation found that hospitals conducted non-consensual pelvic exams on women under anesthesia. Oftentimes, these exams weren't necessary and were just done for educational purposes for doctors in training. So, I mean, from the perspective of a patient, kind of seems like medically endorsed sexual assault. It isn't uncommon for medical students to conduct breast, rectal, and prostate exams on unconscious patients who may have signed forms weeks in advance of medical procedures, not knowing that they were consenting to having med students practice probing their unconscious bodies. Believe it or not, this was only prohibited in a handful of states at the time, although in recent years, more states have passed laws prohibiting this practice. Here to help us figure out what was going on, what is going on, and what will be going on is a Hysteria favorite. She's a board-certified OBGYN, an Army vet, and a sex and reproductive health activist. You can follow her on Instagram, and you should follow her on Instagram and TikTok for some of the best content out there. Dr. Heather Irrabunda, welcome to Hysteria.
Hi, guys. Good to see you guys again.
So good to see you always. But can you please start us off by helping us figure out what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. So this was it's a practice that I think is diminishing in medicine, if that makes sense, but definitely a thing. It's not made up. It's something that even as a medical student, I remember starting my OBGYN rotation, and it's like, yep, so one of the main ways you're going to learn how to do a pelvic exam is during a surgery for, you know, hysterectomy, any sort of procedure where a patient is, you know, asleep, anesthetized, and it would be the attending physician. So that's the one who you probably spoke to during your appointment, who you signed up to do the surgery for, any residents involved, any students. And it was unnerving, but we were told that that's what happened and that's what we do.
Oh my gosh.
Fuck.
So in some,
cringy.
Yeah. So that what do you think of the new HHS standards to make sure that patients have like affirmatively consented to sensitive exams before they're put under anesthesia?
I think it's absolutely necessary. They actually passed a law about this in New York a few years ago. And so in New York, we explicitly have to get affirmative consent for these types of things. And what I think is pretty cool, actually, is that oftentimes we have a conversation with the student and the attending physician. So, like, oftentimes what will happen is that, and, you know, and we love to make sure that we let the patients know, hey, you don't have to be okay with this. You can say no. No one's going to get offended. It's not going to mean that you won't be able to get your surgery or your procedure. But we take time to explain it. And it actually gives the students a lot more time to talk to the patient, to get to know the patient. The patient gets to know them. And I think it's a step in the right direction, but it's definitely something that needs to be done because I agree. I feel like a lot of people did not know that when they sign that consent form that they're signing, that part that says exam under anesthesia
right.
Is an exam with multiple people are performing. And I believe that it needs to be clarified and I'm happy that we are clarifying that.
Mm-hmm. Because you know what, Dr. Heather? Here's how I felt when I was reading all of this. If someone asks me, probably 90% chance I'm going to say yes because I know it's happening. I know I'm contributing to something. But it feels a bit like, I mean, it's kind of weird, but it feels a little bit like organ donation. Like, yeah, I just want to sign. I just want to say I understand and I'm doing it. But like if I were to wake up and it had happened and you can sort of maybe feel that it happened, I'd feel violated.
Exactly. And that's something that I think is a move forward in medicine because oftentimes what I notice, especially when I was training, and I'm not that old, but I feel like these days, I feel like back in my day, you know, it kind of makes you feel old. But like the way that we were taught was that, oh, people don't know what's good for them. They you know, like, women don't know what's good
of
for
course.
Them. They're going to say no. They're not going to let us do this. And I'm like, most people are reasonable. And if they say no, it's for a good reason. And maybe we should listen to that and not do things that you think people are going to say no to. Maybe we should reexamine what we're doing instead of saying, well, we know it's right all right. the time.
Yeah. You know, reading these like reports and reading about the new guidance kind of reminded me of how birth tends to go. Like with my first birth, I worked with a doula and we came up with a birth plan, which, you know, as a provider, you know that planning is not something that birth really does. It doesn't really work. It's kind of like an unplannable thing. But you come up with a list of preferences before you go into birth because otherwise, you go into a hospital and a lot of providers and a lot of facilities will just kind of assume that they know what's best for you and just do things to you without asking. Like before I gave birth, I had to really specify that I didn't want male providers without like direct verbal consent right before they, you know, entered my room. It's my right. preference. I had to specify that I didn't want I wanted cervical checks minimized because otherwise they just like come in and touch your cervix while you're like in the process of giving birth. And there's like not a ton of, there's information that sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's not useful. It's just the thing that they do. How else are you seeing that like the OBGYN profession is evolving to empower patients more?
I think people are really taking the chance with telling patients, like they're taking the opportunity to tell patients what they're doing. Because I mm-hmm. feel like a lot of times we just weren't taught that. We said that, hey, you're in our space. This is what we do. You're probably not going to understand it. And if you say no, it's against your best interest. But I think now just even saying before you're going to touch somebody, can I touch you? This is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm doing it. I think more people are trying to take the opportunity to do that with patients. And I think that's so, so, so important. I think that even having conversations about why we're prescribing certain medications is really important because I think that all too often, many of us, especially if we were prescribed birth control, like, you know, I'm in my 40s, prescribed birth control when I was in my teens or 20s, they were just given to us and said, okay, cool, like, you know, good luck. You know, you have acne, this is for that. You have this is, you know, you have heavy bleeding, it's for that. But now I think we're taking the time out to really explain things to patients and say, hey, I think you can understand this. Is this something you really want to do? And these are the reasons why. I think, you know, allowing folks to bring more people into the exam room. Like, so for example, I felt like before people were very reticent, like physicians, hospital folks were like, you know, oh, have your partner step outside or, you know, those types of things. And I think we're now moving to the direction of having more people involved in the care, like making it a communal space. I wouldn't say everywhere is doing that, but I think more places are leaning towards that because we know through research that this helps people live their healthiest lives, get the best out of the care that we're providing.
Mm-hmm. And as a patient, how can you advocate for yourself with a provider who maybe isn't as progressive when it comes to seeking consent?
I think verbalizing it, and I know it's hard because of the perceived power differential and the real power differential sometimes in those rooms, especially if your provider's coming off cold and you feel like they're not listening to you. But sometimes you need to pause them because oftentimes they're humans too. They may be going through something in their, you know, the rest of their day that you're not privy to, and you don't realize that maybe that wasn't their intent. Maybe they did want to listen to you. Maybe they're just having, you know, a bad day or something like that. I like to see the better in people, I guess, but I think you need to stop people in their tracks and say, hey, like, can you tell me what's going on? Is there an exam going to be involved? Who's going to be doing the exam? Asking questions, stating what you don't want, because I feel like once a patient, sometimes if I'm not even thinking about it and a patient tells me, hey, just FYI, like, I want to minimize cervical exams or something like that, even if I didn't explicitly ask you about that, you have now reminded me of that. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, okay, cool. Let me put that in your chart. Let me, you know, communicate that to the team. So I think really verbalizing what you want is key. And if you're not able to do that, to tell somebody who's close to you who will be there, like especially if you're in a birthing situation, let's say it's your doula, your partner, your friend, your family member, let them know the types of things that are absolute no's for you. And also tell them to feel empowered that they know you, right? Because I feel like a lot of times you may not explicitly tell the person you're with everything that you would want. But if my partner knows me or my mom knows me or someone like that, they would know that maybe I wouldn't be down for five people doing an exam on me at the same time. Maybe I wouldn't be down with a male provider. Maybe I wouldn't be down for these things. And I would just let those folks know that, hey, if something sounds like a procedure or a situation that I would not want, please make sure that you let them know my wishes if I'm not able to do that myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Heather Irrabunda, thank you so much for helping us understand this story a little bit better.
Yes.
And for the great advice on how to advocate for ourselves for more consent from our providers. All right, we have to take a quick break, but stick around. There's more Hysteria when we come back. One more story we wanted to get into.
You know what this is? This is like a sani pedi all rolled up into one in the best way possible. So, Erin, we're officially in the golden era for women's sports, or as you said earlier, henceforth known, just sports, just sports. The women's NCAA basketball tournament has been some of the most riveting, competitive, and record-breaking basketball we've seen in a long time. And Erin, I have to say, here in upstate New York, not a lot of exciting shit happens, but some of these games were actually played not far from me in Albany, New York, and the excitement here was palpable. It was nothing but joy here. Lots of little ladies in their jerseys at the bus stop the other morning. It was awesome. Like, just so excited, so hyped up. Monday night saw the rematch of the 2023 NCAAW championship between Caitlin Clark, oh my God, she is something else, of Iowa, and Angel Reese from LSU. Ultimately, Clark and Iowa prevailed. The game shattered records, averaging 12.3 million viewers, making it the most watched college basketball game, men or women's, to ever air on ESPN.
That is wild.
Wait, it gets better. 12.3 million viewers also means it averaged more viewers than any MLB, NHL, or MLS game last season, and only one NBA game last season beats it.
Wow.
What?
People are hyped about the NCAA women, and I cannot blame them. It is thrilling.
It is thrilling. Erin, a couple other little nuggets that I know you and I have both really enjoyed. Did you know that the women's Final Four tickets are outpricing the men's? Average price for a ticket for the women's game right now is $1,994. The men, $1,600. Build it and they will come. Now, of course, we can't have everything be nice and wonderful. There had to be a couple little hiccups, one particularly gross one that we have to talk about. Los Angeles Times, Erin. LA Times ran a truly puzzling editorial in the run-up to the LSU-UCLA game, where Times sports columnist Ben Bolch, is that how you say his name?
Bolch? Think it doesn't matter.
Who cares, right?
I'm sorry. He doesn't deserve a pronunciation check. Not after this misstep.
Obviously, a dude who wrote the following, quote, "Do you prefer America's sweethearts or its dirty debutantes? Milk and cookies or Louisiana hot sauce?" End quote. Among other misogynist and insulting things. Erin, you and I were texting about this, and I told you that because, you know, I'm a weird nerd, I was like, dirty debutantes. I Googled it. That shit is fucking deeply offensive. Yeah. That is some dark fucking shit.
Yeah. Don't Google dirty debutantes.
Don't do it. We did it for you. We're telling you it's as bad as you think it might be. So after outcry, including a press conference where Coach Mulkey called the column sexist, Bolch, whatever his name is, apologized, and the Times edited the article. LSU won their game against UCLA, which did not sign up to be included in this fight.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, look, LSU's team has a lot of swagger, and they love to taunt, but they're really fucking good, and that's how they play basketball. And I just was imagining, like, UCLA, just being a player for UCLA and just being like, dude, what the fuck? You're not helping.
You're not helping.
Like, why do this? It was such a stupid thing to say. And honestly, as somebody who used to be like an editor, sometimes I read things that are allowed to be published, and I'm like, the editor that allowed this is
totally
deeply evil. Because on one hand, as an editor, you have to be like, yeah, oh my God, great stuff. Great stuff. You're doing great. just a couple little cuts. Let me know if you approve and then we'll run it. And like, there are times when if you care about the writer as a human person, you're going to say, you know, I'm bumping up against this paragraph or this phrase. I see what you're trying to say, but is there a way to phrase it that doesn't use the term dirty debutantes?
I mean, this editor
threw him under the bus. I mean,
can I just say something?
Yeah.
I am a 48-year-old woman who was raised by people who are now in their 70s. I have picked up phrases over my life that, like, when I'm about to say something that one of my parents says that they may have picked up when they were in their 20s or even younger, I just take a hot minute and I Google it to make sure that in 2024, it's not fucked up. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, my God. A thing that really got to me about this Ben Bolch column, which I saw mentioned on Twitter before I read it myself, and I thought people were just joking. I thought they were making fun of some, like, light sexism. But the dirty debutantes, milk and cookies or Louisiana hot sauce, I'm sorry.
What?
I thought
Fuck
this
off.
Was basketball, not the virgin whore dichotomy. Like, these are – and also these people.
Also, why is it food?
It's weird. Also,
do you
why
know what
not,
I mean?
Like, why can't you enjoy two different styles of basketball, just removing the sexism from everything? If you like watching some, like, head-down workhorses, bright and shiny, happy, upbeat people, you could also like watching basketball players who are like, these people are intimidating, and they will taunt you, and they'll get in your face, and they'll bash you around in the paint. Like, can't you like both things? Anyway, I found it to be like, okay, this guy is a middle-aged man. He's a middle-aged man writing these things about 18 to like 22-year-old girls. Like, they're legally adults, but like, I don't, in my mind as an elder, I don't really consider somebody an adult until their frontal lobe has finished forming.
It's true, 25.
25 to 27 mm-hmm. years old, sometimes longer. But it's just like, what a weird, what a bizarre thing for a grown man, for a grown man to write. But yeah, that was something that like none of the players had anything to do with. I thought that watching LSU in Iowa was thrilling because everybody on the court was playing as hard as they could. Nobody was playing dirty. You know, I thought the officials officiated the game very fairly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit disappointing to see Angel Reese go out on a charge.
I know.
Because I wanted her to be able to play to the end of that game. And she was also playing on one leg. That's the thing that people don't.
Unbelievable.
Like, she was basically playing on one leg. But Caitlin Clark is just.
Like, unbelievable.
I don't understand. I don't understand how it happens, how it works. How does she exist?
I can tell you. I see people, someone like her with that kind of physical ability, and I'm just like, I should stay in the house. I should just stay in the house.
There is a player for UConn named Paige Beckers who is being discussed a lot. She is, I believe, a senior now, and we watched her play in the NCAA tournament like as a freshman, and she just completely was awesome. And then she had like two really devastating injuries in a row, and now is like the fucking LeBron of her team. Like the way that she moves, she's so fast. She's like so smart. I just love watching her play, and watching UConn beat USC was really exciting, especially because as someone who lives in Los Angeles, it's really exciting to see a local team have a freshman, Juju Watkins, who is one of the like more exciting young players that is currently playing. So like there is a possibility that like next year, I'm already like, ooh, I should try to go see Juju next year.
Yeah, of course.
So cool. So the women's Final Four will start on Friday evening at 7 p.m. with undefeated South Carolina against NC State. We haven't even gotten to talk about either of those teams, but it's going to be great. UConn, Iowa, Beckers, Caitlin Clark on the same court. Around 9:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Yep.
Gosh, tune in because everybody
can't
else.
Wait.
Everybody else is, and if you're not tuning in, you're not going to be able to talk about what happened in the game with the other people.
Then you're going to feel sad.
All right, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got an interview with one of Washington's most correct people.
Icon.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who support those who opposed the war in Iraq before it was cool. Our guest today has been the Congresswoman representing California's 12th district since 1998. She's a longtime progressive politician fighting injustices like poverty, HIV/AIDS, violence against women, and war. She's currently the highest-ranking Black woman appointed to Democratic leadership, Representative Barbara Lee. Welcome to Hysteria.
Nice being with you.
We are so happy you're here.
First, so excited.
First off, I just want to ask, what's it like to always be right?
Listen, I don't think about it. I just do what I think is right and keep going.
Okay, so you're not afraid of being progressive even when it's been unpopular or unfashionable. Like, how do you know when you're right? Like, how do you stick to your morals when it feels like people are slow to catch up?
Well, you have to use your head. You have to use your heart. And you have to have a moral compass, but you also have to understand, as a public official, the Constitution. And then you put all that together and make a decision. And generally, your head and your heart, you know, and the Constitution, and if you have a faith, when all that comes together, then it works.
So is there any convincing people to come to your side, or is it better to just have people find their way on their own?
No, you've got to convince people. That means educating people. Because remember, once we're elected, we have a lot of information that the public doesn't have. And my job as a representative is to bring forth information that I have that people may not have so that they can be educated and be informed. And so that's really a large part of my job, is bringing government closer to people so that they can engage in this democracy. Because if you don't have the information, how do you know what's right, what's wrong, as it relates to public policies? How do you know how to challenge myself and other elected officials to do the right thing on behalf of people rather than profits and rather than corporate greed?
Now, Congresswoman, we want to congratulate you on running such an inspiring grassroots Senate campaign. California had very low turnout for what was actually a very important primary with real choices. The balance of the House could hinge on the Golden State. How do we get the people who sat out the primary out for the general?
Sure. And let me just tell you, if we had had the money, of course, the establishment put money into other campaigns. But had we had the money, we would have been in the top two. And what happened also was that people just did not vote, especially young people and black and brown people. And so we have to make sure, myself, in terms of my priority between now and November, is that I somehow keep this grassroots movement going, because it is a movement. I mean, I had a coalition. It was a multiracial, multigenerational coalition. People of color, One Our Revolution, Working Families Party, Gen Z for Change. We had Reproductive Freedom for All. I mean, we had an amazing coalition. I'm keeping that coalition together and trying to get people motivated to work hard to get people to the polls. And that takes a lot of work. It takes grassroots organizing, and it takes money. And so I've got to raise more money. And of course, that's always the challenge in America. And we've got to get to public financing of campaigns. But until then, we've got to just keep going, keep fighting, and keep educating, especially young people, that their vote matters. And that had it in an example is had certain precincts voted for Hillary Clinton rather than Donald Trump, we would not have our reproductive rights taken away. And so it's connecting, mm-hmm. you know, the election and a president or a member of Congress with their daily lives that we have to do better with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is such a frustrating what if. Representative, what are your priorities from now until the end of Biden's first term?
Well, of course, you know, I voted against the authorization to use force. I was the only one. I'm trying to get that repealed, and I've got Republicans helping me. It's bipartisan in the ROC authorization. So I'm fighting hard. Been doing this for years, though, trying to get that passed. Secondly, I want to get the extension of PEPFAR, the Global AIDS Initiative, a five-year extension, but there are those in Congress who are undermining it. It's always been bipartisan, and I'm going to keep working to, if we can't get a five-year extension this year, we got at least a one-year, but I'm going to set the table for that to happen next year. But also, when you look at reproductive freedom, working to make sure that wherever I need to be to make sure that these laws, like in Florida, the constitutional amendments are passed for a right to an abortion, I co-chair the pro-choice caucus, and I'm going to keep fighting between now and when I leave Congress to try to get the Hyde Amendment repealed and to try to get the Women's Health Protection Act written into law. And that's extremely important. Also, when you look at the defense budget, I'm going to keep fighting, and a goal of mine is to get more votes to cut the defense budget by $100 billion. Here we have a defense budget that's out of control, over $800 billion. And we have got to cut it because, guess what? The Pentagon had never been audited. I finally got it audited. It's flunked six audits. And so I want to, again, raise awareness about the looming crisis in our democracy, and that's continuing to fund a Pentagon, wasting taxpayer dollars that should be used for housing and for schools and for, you know, health care and all of the domestic needs. And finally, I'll just say housing. You know, we have an affordable housing crisis, and I've got several bills. My Deposit Act, I want to get that passed, which would set up a revolving fund at HUD that would allow for people who need a deposit. Here in California, first and last month rent security deposit, that could be up to $15,000, $20,000. And that is a barrier to getting decent, safe housing. And so I want to get my bill passed into law so that people will have a better path into affordable housing. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, we've got to win elections. That's the top priority, is making sure that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris win and that we take back the House and the Senate, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, Congresswoman, something Aaron and I talk about a lot, and we're going to see what you have to say. How many planes need to fall apart in the sky before we get high-speed rail?
I've been working on high-speed rail for many years. It's slow coming. But, you know, we've got to get there. Other countries are way ahead of us. And again, this is educating the public. We have to have the political will. For some reason, Republicans don't want to see high-speed rail. I mean, it's environmentally sound. It's safe. It's the alternative to airplanes and to driving. It's a reasonable way to for mode of transportation, and it creates good paying union jobs. So it's the political will. I don't know how long it's going to take, but believe you me, I'm going to continue to fight for that, even not being a member of Congress. I'm going to be very active on a lot of these issues.
Oh my gosh, tell me where to show up and I will help with getting
we'll protest, we'll pick it.
I would love to have high speed. I live in California in Los Angeles, and I would love for there to be high speed rail so that we could connect to other parts of this giant state. It would be so helpful to so many people. So final question, Congresswoman, how can people who have been in public service for decades like you instill wisdom in younger generations without the younger folks rejecting it?
Well, I think it's important that you be authentic. When you look at myself personally, it was Shirley Chisholm. And if you haven't seen the movie Shirley on Netflix, watch it, because she was the first black woman elected to Congress. And in that film, there's a character named Barbara Lee. And it shows the trajectory and how Shirley Chisholm made me register to vote and convinced me that I could make a difference. And I was one of those. I was a community worker with the Black Panther Party, very astute, very clear about politics. And I knew I was not going to get involved in Democratic or Republican politics because it didn't mean much to me. I was a single mom, public assistance, didn't have child care funding, money, had to take my kids to class with me, like so many young people now. But it took one person, that was Shirley Chisholm, to convince me that I could make a difference. So, and I was skeptical. And so please watch that film. You'll see what happened. They portrayed Shirley Chisholm, Regina King did, in a phenomenal way. And Christina Jackson, I mean, it was, when I met her, it was like me meeting me. And so that's what I would say is it's getting young people to be an authentic and listening. When you look at the young people that I mentored, for example, Justin Jones, Tennessee Rep Justin Jones. I mean, look at what he's doing in Tennessee in terms of gun safety and in terms of leadership. He was my intern. You know, I've got so many young people who I have hired who have a seat at the table, who are all over the country. My Martin Luther King Freedom Center, young people leading on environmental issues. So it's up to us to not only talk to them, but to bring them along and give them responsibility. And I'm writing my school climate change bill to have a curriculum on climate in the public schools. So high school students wrote that bill for me. And they're lobbying members of Congress. And so I'd say what we have to do as elected officials or as media professionals, as teachers, whomever, wherever we land, is bring young people along and give them those chances to have a seat at the table. Listen to them, because they're the ones who are going to take over the future. I'm not going to say I know best for you guys. I mean, I support young people registering to vote at 16 and voting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they deserve to have to be empowered. So empower young people and don't just leave them beside thinking that, well, they can't vote. They're not that important. Believe you me, they are that important, because they're the ones crafting global peace and security strategies for the future. So I'm really proud of them, and I'm so proud of the ones that I have. That's why so many young people supported me in the campaign. But I couldn't get them to the polls, though, because they still were upset about the administration not calling for a ceasefire, which, again, a goal of mine, going back to the first question, is to see a ceasefire in the Middle East. I just came back from Chad, where on the Sudanese border, where women, 70% of the refugees are women and children, because the men are getting slaughtered getting to the border. There's a huge war going on in Sudan. I want to see a ceasefire there. So I'm working on all fronts. Young people have a sense of morality and moral clarity right now. And so young people need to know that they've got elected officials calling for peace in the world, because that's what they want, because they see the world in which we live and know that it's chaotic. And so we have to just make sure that we empower them to fight or change.
I said we had one question left, but I actually have one question left. Let's say there's a new Netflix movie forthcoming called Barbara. Who's playing Barbara Lee in the Netflix Barbara movie?
Christina Jackson, who played Barbara Lee in Shirley. she's me. Please, there's nobody else but Christina. But there is a movie out, a documentary. I don't know if you've seen it. It came out a couple of years ago. Abby Ginsberg did. It's called Barbara Lee Speaking Truth to Power. It won the top documentary for the NAACP Image Award contest several years ago. So it's up on, I don't know, Amazon Prime, I think. But that's a film that it took Abby Ginsberg 4 years to make, because I didn't want to do it. And she just followed me everywhere. She did a phenomenal job. It won so many film awards all around the country. But so I'm me in that one.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to link to that in our show notes so that our
listeners can find it.
Representative Barbara Lee, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for all of your work for the people of California and for the nation.
Thank you so much. You. Really good being with you.
We're going to take a quick break, but stick around. There's more hysteria coming up. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for optimistic realists, realistic optimists, pragmatists. We're not haters, is what I'm saying.
No, we're just honest.
I'm a hater with a optimist rising and a pragmatist moon. Those are my big three.
I'm just a Pisces swimming through optimistic waters.
All right. Before we get to Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, some announcements for the class. For those who have to undergo a mastectomy, recovery is often a jarring, life-altering experience. But perhaps it's possible for science to help restore some of the most important sensory experiences that breasts provide.
Dr. Stacy Tesler-Lindau has been working for years to do just that through the design of bionic breasts. She joined Dr. Abdul El-Sayed on last week's episode of America Dissected to discuss the goals and science behind her work.
It's a heartening episode that asks you to think about breasts as far more than what society gives them credit for. Tune in and subscribe to America Dissected wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, Alyssa. I'm going to have you kick us off. It's just me and you.
Just us.
Sanity Corner or I Feel Petty. Which one are you picking this week?
Erin, I Feel Petty. I got an email forward that felt like something someone's crazy grandma sent me, and I deleted it.
People are still forwarding things?
Wait.
Okay.
But it was by someone I knew who's like kind of a famous Hollywood writer who's very smart, and I was like, ugh, what is this? Mm-hmm. And then I read it. And I didn't think it was real until my friend Allie was like, girl, did you see that forward? Erin, it was a friend of ours who was writing us to tell us how dire things are with Donald Trump. And there was at the bottom of the email a picture of Joe Biden hogtied. In the back of someone's truck. And I like really didn't understand what it was. And Allie was like, girl, it's a decal people can buy to put on the back of their car or pickup truck that shows as if Joe Biden is hogtied in the back of their car. Now, look, I'm from upstate New York. I know hogtie when I see it. It is so fucking sick, Erin. It is so violent. It is, what are they doing? Like if there is any question about what life will be like if Donald Trump is president, hogtie. And the best was, I thought that our friend had seen it on someone's crazy truck. Trump had tweeted it.
Okay. So this is what happens when you outlaw porn websites in places like Texas and Utah. People start making their own little porn and pretending that it is a political statement. Folks, no judgment if you've got a fetish.
Enjoy yourself on Pornhub. Do whatever.
No, I mean,
I don't care.
It does feel like, on one hand, I'm like, you know, that old Onion article that was like Marilyn Manson now traveling door to door trying to shock people.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's sort of bored. I feel like it's sort of that. It's like Donald Trump is sort of becoming this like Marilyn Manson, trying to get people to, you're wearing pearls, you better clutch them, you better clutch them, you better, like he's just, he wants a response, he wants a reaction. But at the same time, it's like, that's gross.
It's gross. I mean, and I didn't clutch my pearls. I'm only reacting to you. I posted nothing of it. I haven't been on X/Twitter in ages. Mm-hmm. But I just think that's just fucking wild. Yeah. It was on the heels of watching a video where a reporter had gone outside a Trump rally and asked a lot of men, like, what they think the role of women is. And they all were hands down, like, in the kitchen. And I just was, I was feeling really bad this weekend.
I mean, the thing that's very sad to me about men who think women belong in the kitchen is that that to me is a tell that you don't wipe your own ass. And let me explain why.
Please.
That you don't clean your own ass. You, if you think that there is an entire class of people based on gender whose role it is to provide for your basic needs, that means that you are a boy. You are not an adult capable of taking care of yourself. You can't cook rice without checking the instructions. You can't boil water. You would be completely adrift in a nest of rat crap and crumpled up receipts if your wife were to ever die, because nobody ever taught you how to take care of yourself. And that is embarrassing, dude. It is fucking embarrassing. Like, learn how to cook for, if you don't know how to cook and clean for yourself, if you think that somebody else owes you labor to provide that for you, you're a child. You're a goddamn child.
Child.
Anyway.
What about you? What you got?
I've got kind of a sanity corner. Okay, so look, California, you got me. I find astrology stuff to be really fascinating. I listen to Chani Nicholas's podcast. I think that she just gives really good advice, regardless of whether or not you believe in the underlying reasons for the advice. I think she gives really good advice and offers really interesting insight just to move through your day, to move through your week. I think it's just helpful to be, to examine yourself and to think about the way that you're acting and how that relates to the world around you, right? So with that preface that I feel like I need to make, because everybody, there's so many people who feel like they've made, I feel like they've made it their whole personality to be like, I don't believe in astrology. Cool. I don't.
Okay for you.
Yeah, cool. I don't believe in Catholicism and I don't like make that my whole personality. Anyway, Mercury is currently in retrograde, right?
Oh, you're telling me.
Mercury's in retrograde. It's been in retrograde since April 1st. This is April 2024 is apparently a time of just chaos and wackiness, astrologically speaking. We have a retrograde through Aries, and we also have an eclipse in Aries, a total solar eclipse in Aries that is just so happens to be tracking across like Tornado Alley of the U.S.
It is. I got my glasses.
Yeah. It's just like it's tracking through the U.S. There's going to be like a complete and total solar eclipse. There's something weird also going on with cicadas. Like there's this giant cicada hatch that's going to happen like right around where the intersection is of the last two solar eclipse paths in the U.S. It is bonkers. In Texas, when the path of the total solar eclipse happens on April 8th, which is next Monday, so, you know, Godspeed, everybody. Hope we all make it through. When the total eclipse hits the Dallas area, there is a comet that will be visible very close to the blocked out sun that is called the Devil's Comet. Guys, look. If we were an ancient civilization that like worshiped the sun, we would be like revving up our human sacrifice right now because
it would be Y2K vibes.
There's a bunch of stuff happening in the sky that people are like, whoa, and like in nature. And anyway, it's sort of been a sanity corner for me to, rather than getting panicked about things that seem a little bit out of control,
you're girding yourself. You're ready.
It's the stars' fault. You know, like, look, I'm just gonna hold on, get through the next month, and you know, not get too worked up about the way that things are happening, because this was always gonna happen. This was always going to happen.
Nothing we can do. You just got to hold on.
You just got to hold on. And you know what I found out, speaking of the eclipse, which I think is, it's a lot of fun. It's a really rare event and it's going to be a really long
eclipse. Yeah, I'm excited.
Are you in the path?
We're almost totally, I think the Buffalo, New York and Austin, Texas are like that trajectory is the total. Uh-huh. We're just like a hair off. So we're going to have a near total eclipse. And I found the certified glasses and bought them for everyone in my neighborhood.
Oh my God. Of course you did. Of course
look,
you did.
We have big hills up here.
Yeah.
I don't want my friends going blind. I want everyone to enjoy.
Well, I have a friend who lives in the Cleveland area, and her mm-hmm. kid's school got canceled. Everyone's treating it like big holiday.
But do you want to know what I realized? Because New York City schools are canceled, and schools up by me are getting out at 12 o'clock. I think it's because they can't have kids outside during recess.
Oh,
they can't have them outside. I think that's why. You heard it here first.
So you think that, like, putting all the kids in several houses is going to lessen? Oh, you know what? I think it's a liability thing. They don't want
to. It's a liability thing. They can't have them go blind on the playground.
Yeah, the kids are still. There's still going to be some kids that stare at the eclipse Donald Trump style.
Yep.
Do you remember that picture?
Of course I do. Why do you think I specifically was like, I need the NASA certified glasses?
The 2017 eclipse. There's a famous photo of Donald Trump standing on the balcony outside the White House, looking directly at the sun. Which is
after
just,
every newscast that morning said not to.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that maybe is a aspect of his personality that could be exploited a little bit more by perhaps his political enemies. You tell him not to do something like, hey, dude.
Aaron, don't you think that this is what the cosmos are trying to do in April? Maybe they're really on our side.
Maybe the universe is just horrible and indifferent, and whatever happens to us is just a thing that happens. But yeah, it's been fun to pay attention to all the kind of like witchy people on social media, all the like astrology people, the people who are a little bit more academic about what's happening in nature right now.
TikTok is lit right now.
TikTok is lit right now, but I also think people that study cicadas are more excited than they ever are going to be, because this is going to be a historic bug event. Also,
yikes.
If you're into bugs,
yikes.
Stars and bugs.
Oh, boy.
All right. That is all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die.
Thank you.
I also want to thank Representative Barbara Lee, not only for this interview, but for her whole thing.
All of it.
For all of it. Thank you, Dr. Heather Irabunda, for coming on and explaining something complicated and weird to us. And listeners, we love you so much. If you want to reach out, hysteria@crooked.com, we love hearing from you. We think you're the smartest, the coolest, the funniest.
Most interesting.
And you've the most insightful. So
yeah.
Get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com, if you have some feedback or you have any tips or you just want to say hi. And there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Aaron Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. Yeah.